Global Sport Matters presents, in collaboration with Columbia University Sports Management, the Sports Professors Podcast, where professors Kenneth Shropshire and Scott Rosner discuss the 101 on what happened in sports business.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Professors Podcast. This is Scott Rosner, Academic Director of the Sports Management Program and a professor at Columbia University, along with my former colleague, close friend, Ken Shropshire, the CEO of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University, Professor Emeritus at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. How are you doing today, Ken?
Doing good. It's just another pandemic day, you know.
It is our first episode of 2022, as we had a holiday hiatus, as, got travel in the world, or not so much, traveling from one room of the home to the other. But what's caught your eye in the last few weeks in the business of sports?
Well, you know what? I think it's this overriding theme related to athlete freedom, moving around, making money, not making money, playing more games than maybe you want to play. But I think interspersed in all this is money. And, a few different topics that get us to that, and thinking about where are the priorities in sports and what are rulemakers doing? You know, are you looking out for the athletes? Or are you looking for more money to come in? Or are there some athlete freedom issues as well? So, you know, the first one, a couple of global issues, I guess. Australian Open.
And the ongoing tournament, but we're not that interested in the tennis.
No, not the tennis. But who's able to play? Who's able to come into the country? I don't know how many Australian listeners we have. The country that was built on, pirates or whatever. You know, it's all the outcasts of the world were sent down there, whatever it was. It's a unique place, but it's also through this COVID period, Australia and New Zealand have had some unique success and not regarding keeping COVID out of their island country. So, so what about athletes in that? And how closely have you been following Novak Djokovic and his whole saga?
Pretty closely. It's been hard not to follow it. It really transcended sports and got into the mainstream news. And to recap for our listeners who have been, out and about and not in Australia, which is, by the way, on my bucket list of places to visit. So a glorious country. And
trying to counteract my pirates and
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I don't want to say, hey, just if you're listening from the Australian, Chamber of Commerce or the embassy, that was Shropshire who said that, not Rosner. I want to come. And I disavow myself from all comments made by my colleague. So what we're talking about in this context is, so Djokovic is unvaccinated and has been fairly front and center about that over time. But, filed for an exemption. There was some sort of mishap with the exemption, whether it was intentional or unintentional. We don't know. And ultimately is there's a whole brouhaha at the border with different political forces getting involved. And ultimately, after much hue and cry and back and forth in the legal system there, he is banned from entering the country. His visa that had been granted is revoked. And the tournament goes on without the world's number one player, who, by the way, could actually lose his ranking depending on the outcome of the tournament. So, at one level, Ken, I look at this and, as a really unfortunate politicization of an athlete and his own private wishes, right? He was thrust into this, and I think that's unfortunate, right? When the athlete is used and becomes much more about for that athlete in that moment, a much bigger issue that was never really intended to be made an issue of.
Yeah. Right? You know what? As you say that, I think about it became a, for Australians, it became the focal point for immigration issues. It became the focal point for special treatment. And you know, one of the stories, I mean, ongoing parts of the story was the hotel that he was cast into that he had to stay in was a place where some folks trying to come into the country had been stuck there apparently for months and years, and photos of very bad treatment and otherwise. So a lot of the commentary was, you know, Novak is a human just like us. And they were trying to cast themselves in the same light, I think appropriately, that you can't treat him any differently than you treat us. You know, he certainly had more resources and the capability to address these issues and multiple hearings and that sort of thing. But it did become, you know, if you want to have some sympathy for the guy, which I don't, he was cast in this really high level kind of space to be the face of an immigration problem in Australia and a COVID problem in Australia potentially, which was not, you know, certainly not what he was trying to do, I don't think. I think he just was being his usual, Grant probably would proclaim himself, arrogant kind of confident self, that you should let me play. I'm world number one. And I kind of did what you guys said to do. And it sounded like there was some nuance that he did what the state of Victoria said you had to do, but not the at the federal level, what he was supposed to do. So that became the problem. But it did, you know, in a broader sense of the sports world with, you know, Kyrie Irving and Aaron Rodgers and all these other folks we've had that have had these vaccination kinds of issues. It did cast large, and it did kind of address large this whole idea of, you know, we should not give athletes special treatment in this matter.
And I think we're both in agreement on that, just from our own personal thoughts and having looked at this for between the two of us, well over a half century combined. That seems appropriate, and, you know, for not just the moment that we're in, right, but in general. And I think the moment we're in, you know, with in the spirit of Spider-Man new movie dominating the global box office right now, you know, it's with great power comes great responsibility. And there is, you know, there's not an obligation to get vaccinated. Let's be clear about that, right? There's not a vaccine mandate on tennis players or on other athletes, but there's a vaccine mandate in various places on people, right? And these athletes are individuals and should not be treated better or worse than, you know, than others. This is the rule is the rule. And certainly, you know, again, thrust into the unfortunate position of being the facer, which I agree with you. I don't think that was the intent of his stance, but this the position that he finds himself in regardless. Now, from a larger perspective, when we think about the athlete in his case as being transcendent, right? Who's, you know, someone who is, you know, arguably a transcendent tennis player. In other words, the casual sports fan, the non-fan knows who the athlete is. They kind of stop what they're doing and pay attention to that athlete. And in the tennis world, certainly Roger Federer would fall into that category. You know, Rafael Nadal would fall into that category. One can argue whether Djokovic has been crowded out, even though his tennis success will likely prove, in terms of Grand Slams, to be greater than either one of those guys. But how does this affect the athlete and his legacy and marketability?
Oh, I think some deals will be taken away. I understood some deals were being reviewed already. I mean, that is part of the risk you take when you step out on an issue like this, when you know, think you have this higher level of uniqueness. What's that when you can't eat wheat stuff? What's that called? When you're a gluten, you know, you can declare yourself gluten free, but you can't declare yourself vaccination free, you know, and not face the repercussions of doing it. You can be, you know, gluten free, which he is, and you know, you kind of people shrug and say, oh, you know, good for you.
Okay, right.
I'm glad you're addressing whatever issue you might have or whatever. But vaccination free gets you in a whole another space that might impact me. The fact that you're not, you know, eating wheat bread or whatever, that's okay.
Tom Brady anti-ice cream
thing. Yeah, that doesn't impact me. But the no vaccination thing, from what I'm being educated about is problematic. But so we'll see where this is going. How what's the long lasting repercussions for him? I guess there's some commentary about the French Open and what's going to happen there. And I would bet, again, unless he's trying to be some sort of poster child for this, that there won't be any further missteps in this kind of way, that his people, and maybe some heads roll too, his people will make sure that he can get in and play and get these records that he's certainly destined to get.
So who do you think is more likely to rehabilitate himself from this kind of polarizing moment, if either? One, Aaron Rodgers, or two, Djokovic?
Well, you know what the key is? I mean, it's the the O.J. Simpson rule is this, that if you're never going to play again, if you're not going to have the chance to win, then you will never rehabilitate yourself. Now think of Michael Vick. I mean, again, these are all different kinds of circumstances. 2 years in prison, dogfighting, had a chance to play again. And now you can turn on your TV every weekend. Is that an antiquated usage, TV? Turn on your media device every weekend. And here's Michael Vick. So if you had, and he didn't win a championship, but he played well, had a chance. You got to get back. And so both these guys, I mean, Aaron Rodgers wins the Super Bowl. Novak wins, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, whatever else. He had that little that bump in the road. I mean, the one place where, the Shropshire rule is a little problematic is, Barry Bonds or Pete Rose, and more Barry than Pete. I mean, Pete didn't have a chance to play again. Barry was still out there playing with people having, maybe it's more assumed knowledge. I think if you litigate the thing all the way through, you have a chance to redeem yourself on the field of play. But if you're in prison or if you've been retired for years,
yeah,
OJ rule says you're gone.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. And it's one of those, if you really start to think about it. So we both fall into the category of being kind of anti shut up and dribble, right? We're okay with the athlete speaking his or her mind, their mind, about whatever the issue is. I think where it starts to get problematic is one, look, we can agree or disagree, right? And certainly we're in alignment again on the athletes, our thoughts about the athletes who have chosen not to get vaccinated. But, I think we do have to be careful about thrusting ourselves unwittingly into a place where we're not shut up and dribble, right? If the athlete's opinion disagrees with ours,
yeah,
right? That we understand that it's okay to speak your mind as the athlete, regardless of whether we personally agree, disagree, or others do as well. It's just understanding, more importantly for the athlete, what the implications of speaking out one way or the other can be, right? Whether you're pro Kaepernick, anti Kaepernick, and what he was talking about, or any athlete making any statement. I think there is a degree of caution that we have to have with that.
Yeah, but in the end, you said it right. That say whatever you want to say, but you're going to suffer the repercussions for whatever you might say. So that's really what we see. See going on here. There's a couple other athlete freedom kind of moments that we've had this week that I think we should get to. And some of them spring out of the big issue, I guess, yesterday as we record. The NCAA Constitution was approved by 80% of the delegates. I guess they still call it the NCAA Convention. Virtual and
Yeah, the Constitutional Convention, right?
Sort of all, you know, very different from what these events used to be. And one of the things that, you know, I did, you know, more fully understand as much as I looked at this thing, not the rule book. I mean, the rule book is still the same rule book.
Oh.
You know, still the 400-page tax code kind of rule book. So this really is more of a setting forth of who we are and what we're about. It's a 20-page document that that says, you know, we are, these are our priorities, gender equity, diversity are important, and that the three divisions now have a high level of independence and that sort of thing. So, so that's really what, you know, it's sort of a big deal in the sense of setting the stage for what might be next. In the moment itself, not a whole lot new happens. It does say, you know, sort of like it's sort of like the somebody gets fired and they say, "You can't fire me, I quit." It does say you have NIL rights. You have, so it says all this stuff that's taking place anyway, and the NCAA is kind of getting kind of saying, "Okay, we'll put it in our rules since you're doing it anyway." But what's your big takeaway from this document that does impact how schools operate, how conferences operate, and really in a sense looks at athlete rights, which gets back to this whole athlete freedom kind of issue?
Yeah, so the new constitution, right? If we want to talk about the people who wrote that and had to do, you know, the framers of said constitution, very carefully wordsmithed it, and really to avoid future liability legally to the greatest extent possible. And in doing so, again, if you think about this in a pure kind of political way, what the new NCAA looks like is federalism, right? It's a highly federated institution now, the Institution of Intercollegiate Athletics. In other words, the central body does not have as much power as they have previously in the previous era, and certainly not, you know, even if we go back to the previous big moment in 1996, right, which was the last big changes we had to the NCAA Constitution. And, you know, I think that the, as a general concept then, so it's more decentralized. In other words, the various Division I, Division II, Division III, as you mentioned, have more freedom to craft rules of their own choosing. And what I think the next step is the transitional moment and how we put the interpretations are going to be and the rules that we put in place. You know, getting into things like the manual that we talked about, you know, which exists at each level right now, all the rules interpretations. So that'll be the really kind of, you know, rubber hits the road moment for all of this. You know, certainly the table has been set for those changes to occur and big changes. And, you know, with the doling out of the operator authority to each separate division, what of course that's going to lead to, or at least one would highly suspect that would lead to, is greater power for the bigger conferences and then the schools that are, you know, that are the biggest fish within those conferences. So Power Five, right, you know, certainly, and then the bigger institutions within that. Now, again, this is all in the name of you know, athlete rights. Certainly it is, one could argue the pendulum has swung, you know, many, many years too late to the athlete. But it certainly opens up a lot of questions and about the institution itself and the role of athletics in higher education.
Which gets us to, I think, and you brought this up as we were talking before the show began, to the transfer portal, and when you thought about this, I may have said this five times in the past, but and you say these changes came too late. If the transfer portal existed when I was playing, I would still be in the NFL today.
Long snapper.
Yeah, there's a great ESPN thing on long snappers. I thought about this. Yeah. Well, and if the long snapper especially had really existed, I'd be playing until I was 75. There's no question question about it. But the transfer portal is illustrative of this new day of, and you called it athlete free agency. I mean, it's kind of a different version of one and done. This way you can call this one and done, but you want to talk about that some and what your thoughts are about that. I mean, the plus is there's probably no better example. I mean, even beyond NIL, I think of athlete freedom than from what used to be, where you choose a school, you're stuck. And if you can get out, often you have to get approval from your current school, and then you'll have to sit out for a year before you can play again.
Loss of eligibility. Losing that year of eligibility.
Yeah, but where are we now? And are we going to stay here? And is there more to come? And what is there some harm?
So we're in this new moment, as we just mentioned, of athlete free agency, college athlete free agency,
right?
Which has been in the pros in varying degrees, since the collective bargaining agreement in Major League Baseball, starting in 1976 in the aftermath of Messer Smith and McNally, and then slowly to the other leagues after that. And we're now hitting it in college athletics. So that was all a byproduct of work stoppages and labor moments, and litigation over time, and ultimately included in collective bargaining for those leagues. College athletes, at least at this point, are not represented by unions, and there's no collective bargaining. So they really haven't had much, quite honestly, in the way of rights over time, but now things are changed, right? So the Supreme Court ruling in Alston, which we've talked about, and really sets the table for this to happen, and forces the NCAA changes, which we just talked about, to occur probably later than many of them should have changed, right? So where we are now is that every athlete, college athlete, is free to leave, and in other words, go to another school and play immediately every year. And so this is the one, as you have casual conversations, and I don't know what your conversations are like, Ken, but with conversations with friends of mine who are college sports fans, who know what I do for a living, right, and love this. This is the big thing that they have complaints over. They don't really care about the kids making money. Good for them through NIL and monetizing their name, image, and likeness. It's really that we're in this kind of, hey, you can recruit a whole team in a year kind of moment, or you can lose your whole team in a year kind of moment. And I think that's the one that people, middle school basketball games, I have friends come up and say, hey, this is crazy, right? Talking about, that's all people want to talk about with the transfer report. Yeah. And again, it's not unlike we saw kids from Georgia, we saw kids from Alabama playing in the national championship game, and some Georgia kids, they win the title, and the next day they're entering the portal, right? Not unlike the traditional kind of moment we have in baseball where free agency begins, several days after, a week after, the season ends, and so you have players who win the World Series, and then shortly thereafter enter free agency, so or file for free agency. So same analogous moment. What I'm worried about, I'm not worried about the good for the student athlete, the ability to try to get on the field. For the coaches, the recruiting now never ends. Really, the commitment day, high school kid, national letter of intent moment. Really is just the first step of what is, a multi-year recruiting process. Where I'm concerned is on graduation rates, right? And, what happens, we know almost all of these kids are not going to be professional athletes when they are done, right? The real long-term value, as you pointed out with although you aspired to be a professional football player in a different era, in your mind, you would have been, right? The real value was getting that degree from Stanford, right? And so what I'm worried about is when you transfer schools, and we see this with regular students, right? What's referred to in COVID as NARPs, right? The non-athletic regular people, right? So by student athletes. when you have non-student athletes who transfer, graduation rates are lower, right? You lose credits along the way, just the mechanics of transferring, right, from one institution to another. So we also know that transfer rates for student athletes are also quite low. Graduation rates for student athletes who transfer are historically quite low. That is going to get worse. And I think that is the real cost of this. And what I'm really concerned about is it's great that you want to transfer from school one to school two to pursue more playing time and try to further your career and potential professional career. But are you actually going to graduate? And who is telling you about this? And who is advising you along the way for all of this? It's been a long diatribe, but that is what I'm concerned about. Yes. At the highest level.
Yeah, there's that. And I think the other layer, and then we'll close out with our a final topic on the NFL for those who've been waiting for some pro sports. But the other problem tied in with that, and this kind of brings NIL back in, is, you know, for my economics lesson for the day, the old Oliver Williamson statement on opportunism, that it's self-interest seeking with guile. When you likely to do something wrong.
Look at you dropping Oliver Williams in all of this. This is impressive.
I spent 4 years looking at that stuff. I would call myself an economist. I don't know if you can do that with a BA in economics. But the idea of, I mean, it is like a perfect storm. These kids can move around. And there's this NIL thing. And we're seeing in NIL, which is a topic for another day, because I think it's still kind of ferreting itself out, that as these schools build up these NIL funds, and not directly with the schools, but with affiliated booster-type enterprises, that's going to be used to recruit these transfers. However, new constitution doesn't do a lot. Individual schools and states have to figure this out. The rules are not clear yet on how well you can use these funds or how you can't use them to entice, induce student athletes to move from one place to the other. So, you mentioned in the pre-show about Alabama repealing their NIL law because it was too restrictive.
This is the state of Alabama.
Well, it's the same thing. The Alabama football team and the state of Alabama are the same thing. But you want to be competitive in this space. And part of what these states are saying, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more of that, is we don't want old state U to get behind the eight ball and not be able to be competitive. This is free agency. And in some sense, it is like, the great fear of free agency is that the richer New York and LA teams will get the most players. So, how do I remain competitive? But this also goes back to the Constitution issue and why there is this separation that's going to take place, because the richer schools are going to have the greater opportunities to get the best athletes and now can move from school to school. And as we saw, the kid that went from Clemson to Northwestern and now back to Clemson, you can keep going. You can go get, we're joking, you can go get a little seasoning somewhere and then come back. You can be sent off somewhere and then come back. You decide to go somewhere else and come back. Or, I'll come back when you have a better deal for me is the other kind of standard that could begin to have. We don't know where this could go, but this is the price. This is the price of athlete freedom. This is the price that we pay things to look out for.
Yeah. And to that point, I mean, look, the athlete has more leverage. We both teach negotiations, right? The athlete has more leverage than they've ever had before. And the idea that you can go out and get seasoning somewhere else, that really is just reminiscent of the loan system that we've seen in place for soccer players throughout the world. Right? It's really the same thing. So we've created this moment, perhaps unwittingly, where that can be the case. I keep thinking about, as we get ready to move into a conversation about the NFL, but I keep thinking about this. I know you're not a huge fan of the band, The Who, right? The old classic rock band, right? But the song Won't Get Fooled Again, right? I tip my hat to the new constitution, take a bow to the new revolution, right? And you know, that is, and they, you know, without a couple more verses that I won't break into, but we won't get fooled again, right? Yeah. And you know, that is a real, you know, kind of holding true here, right? So maybe Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend were on to something with that.
I was more of a Meatloaf guy, if we can honor him today.
May he rest in peace. I used to use Paradise by the Dashboard Light to teach contracts, and what was an offer, right? And what was acceptance and what was consideration. If you go to that last verse, the back and forth, it's very instructive.
You really go deep into your trick bag to try to...
All in the name of education, Ken.
Student attention. And I'm glad we made it as many years as we have without what I've seen live is you singing to get the class's attention. But let us not...
Absolutely. Bag of tricks or bag of tricks, right?
Broadway should remain on Broadway. Let's leave it at that.
fair point. So no Professor Harold Hill, though, right? Yeah. So in the NFL, so, you know, we're entering into the divisional round of playoffs this week. You watch any of the wild card games?
I did.
Or did you watch all the wild card games? Maybe better phrase that way.
I watched part of most of them, and most of them were not that competitive. And it did raise the issue of, is this like, I remember when you forced me to pay attention to it. The NHL was the first one that kind of everybody got into the playoffs. And it did kind of have a little bit of that feeling of, you know, two things. You know, first thing for the player rights kind of issue is, are there too many games in the season? And does this drag this out too long? And are we trying to, you know, and again, the issue, there's more money for the league by virtue of expanding all this. And as soon as you slap playoff wild card on something, it becomes a game that more people will pay attention to. And so you can sell more ads and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it gave some more exposure to some players that I had a chance to see, some teams I hadn't seen, and that sort of thing as that kind of fan. But some of the games just weren't that competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as, you know, as two separate issues in a way, although they both involve more games being played. The 17-game season for the teams over the 18 weeks, look, I mean, everybody makes more money as a result of that, right? The athletes make more. They were willing to make the sacrifice of an additional game. Playing an additional game, obviously, you know, the owners make more money from having that additional game across the board. From media to gate to, you know, to a lesser extent sponsorship, right? You're in the eye one additional week. And they monetize that. Those, you know, they signed, you know, what, you know, are, ultimately 9-figure media deals as a result of that over the long term. And that's fine and appropriate. I think what you're talking about with this last weekend is a little bit different issue, which is the notion of the expansion of the playoffs, which happened last year, to 14 teams out of 32. You know, back in the day when the NHL had 16 of 21 teams getting in to the playoffs, where it was like just avoid the bottom five, right, kind of thing. The 14, so you had these matchups. It's almost more of a structural issue. Where you had the matchups between 2 and 7. So the number 2 team used to be a team that got a first round bye. The number 7 team didn't get into the playoffs. And so, you know, that 2-7 game between Kansas City and Pittsburgh, between Tampa Bay and Philly, our team, was, you know, just they just weren't competitive football games, nor should they have been. You know, if you look at betting lines beforehand, those games were high spread games, and you know it, and understandably so. They weren't designed to be competitive, right? In some ways. So You know, a 2-7 game just shouldn't be. You know, the other games, you know, your newly adopted Arizona Cardinals, you know, just got beat, right? They got beat pretty good. The Cowboys 49ers game was not particularly well played, but very, very, very competitive and controversial as well. That Raiders Bengals game was very close. You know, the others, it didn't make for the most compelling viewing, obviously. The Bills, even the Bills Patriots game was close, right? That was a good blowout. But look, the proof is in the viewership, we'll say the NFL. And its media partners, and the ratings were terrific, right? And so the people watched. They didn't seem to care whether for whatever reason. I actually watched on Sunday. I watched the 49ers Cowboys game on Nickelodeon, just in the name of doing field research. I actually watched the slime game, and they did a really, really good job of it. I know that you're and I'm way past that moment too.
You know, I watched,
but it was excellent.
I watched last year under the guise of academics, but you know, if I watched this year, I would have been declared a child. So I didn't have years in a row. You know, as we get ready to close out, I was listening to the Sports Business Journal Abe Madforce thing this morning, and he said
always something. Good, always informative. Right.
Yeah, he said something that caught my attention. I thought about it, but hadn't really thought of it. There's beginning to be cancellations of events at the Super Bowl, that the NFLPA events are now all canceled. We were going to be involved in the pitch competition, that the big party on Friday is canceled, which I'm too old to go to now, but was one of the great events. I mean, the Tampa a few years ago, cigars, scotch, and must have been many years ago, women in cages. It was like a whole crazy, crazy thing that was way,
For the record, I wasn't at that party.
I as soon as I found out what was going on in there, I kept moving. And, you know, times when you realize you're the oldest guy.
You're the old guy. Right?
Yeah, that old guy, well, that's me. Let me get out here before I go sit up on the stool. But, you know, is what's going to happen with what, you know, as we kind of prediction mode, where are we, is it going to be like last year where there's going to be, you know, it may be some more people in the stands, I guess, and depending on what California does in terms of the rules, but it does sound like, I mean, we're a month out and now we've got events, the big events by insiders being canceled.
Yeah, and you know, look, I was just talking about this morning in a different context. I've got a flight the Tuesday of the week of Super Bowl to be out there from Tuesday to Friday, which is, you know, the normal course of business. I'm glad that flight is refundable. That was made, so if the accountants, financial people at Columbia University are listening, that is a refundable flight. you know, as is the hotel.
Right.
You know, but it's a coin toss to me right now whether or not I'll actually be on that plane, you know, to LAX, just because, you know, you there's so many things being canceled that may get to the point where, hey, this is the very purpose for which we're going, which is, you know, network and grow the program, record a bunch of podcasts on Radio Row, you know, may not even exist, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, if your primary reason for going is networking, that you can start thinking about, that's going to be a little problematic unless Rosner and Shropshire are going to meet for a 6-foot apart cup of coffee through the top secret mask straw that I'm inventing that will make me rich and get me out of this business finally.
Yeah, you try to get on the Shark Tank. I would pay to see you on Shark Tank. So on that, until that invention comes along, we'll keep recording podcasts, and that'll be a wrap for this week. For Ken Shropshire, this is Scott Rosner. See you next time.
Take care.
The Sports Professors Podcast is brought to you by Global Sport Matters in collaboration with Columbia University. For more news and to sign up for our newsletter from Global Sport Matters, go to globalsportmatters.com. And for more from the Columbia University Sport Management Program, go to sps.columbia.edu/sports. This episode was produced by me, Kendall Jones, Manager of Events and Programs at the Global Sport Institute. And huge thanks to our sound designer and editor, Sam Esparza and Big U Music. Global Sport Matters podcast is a production of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University. Our Manager of Marketing and Communications is Crisal Valencia. Our Digital Communications Specialist is Brendan Kleen. And our Marketing and Event Assistants are Natalie Skegan, Aiden Corrales, and Kate Nelson. Find more episodes by searching for the Global Sport Matters podcast, and be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. Stay up to date with the Global Sport Matters team by following us on Twitter. We're at Global Sport MTRS.